Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. I'm my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr., and we brought back our favorite RD PhD, Dr. Kevin Klatt. And we're going to be going over just a very quick, brief overview of the new dietary guidelines that were just released that are causing, you know, quite a stir. And Kevin, Dr. Kevin, wrote a really nice little Substack article just kind of going over, you know, the gist of it and some of the discrepancies and the overall overview. And I kind of want to get a sense of like what are dietary guidelines even made for? You alluded to it in your Substack. And so some of that interesting stuff that people, I just don't think, understand about these things.
Right. And a little bit of the history and the timeline, because yeah, I think that matters too. Because I feel like there's a little bit of, I don't know. They're like,
whatever. You're the specialist here. You teach us.
Well, thanks for having me back. Dietary guidelines. I mean, they came about first in the 1980. It was the first official United States dietary guidelines. They're made by a combo effort of USDA and HHS. And, you know, they started off more towards just giving people like really simple recommendations, and they've evolved over time. So the first one was like a little pamphlet with like seven things to focus on, very vague language around like eat less fat and saturated fat, eat less sugar, eat more fiber, maintain a healthy weight, limit alcohol, that sort of thing.
Pretty reasonable stuff.
Not much has changed incredibly. Obviously, like, things evolved over time. The language was less about like eat less, eat more about substitutions, more focus on dietary patterns. And things around 2005, it becomes quite clear that, you know, I think when you say you start in 1980 and by 2005, like things are only getting worse. And there's no evidence that people are following the dietary guidelines. You can say eat fruits and vegetables all you want, but there wasn't really a lot of meat to them. And so you start to see changes that occur where they're getting pretty quantitative about things, where they, you know, eventually we're at the point where it's like less than 10% of calories from sugar and saturated fat. And then that change comes along with like, they're not really intended to be, you know, they've grown to 100+ page documents. They're not intended to be for consumers. They're really intended to be for healthcare professionals and policymakers who are going to adapt them across various settings. Like if you're working in WIC or you're working in SNAP or you're working in a local public health department, you read these and you apply them, you get all the context of what they're intended for, all the different kind of contextual factors that might come into play, and you use them. And then they're always cited in different policies. So technically federal programs have to be aligned with what the dietary guidelines are. And that's really, I think, where they have some weight. Everyone always focuses on what they say, and there's been tweaks and things. Like there's less of a focus on total fat, more on reducing saturated and trans fats than just the total fat number in the past. But across this whole time too, you've seen changes in the process to it, where it used to just be expert opinion and you've moved into the era of more systematic reviews. Despite all that process change, I don't think there's been that much of a dramatic change in what the guidelines are actually recommending. I think people want the guidelines to, you know, be this magical thing. And as I talk about a bit in the Substack, like they're a really small tool. They really only influence things like school lunch, where there's been some progress that's been made. But, you know, they're intended to be a document to use to support other policies, and you need state, local, and federal government to be utilizing them. And you need some like legislative will to do anything. And I think you can look at Congress and see that there's not much legislative will to do all that much. I mean, as we saw with Michelle Obama in 2015, she really tried to make nutrition the centerpiece of, or I guess before 2015, during Obama era. She tried to get I think it got watered down to just like a movement campaign, but she really tried to tackle nutrition and just got painted as the food police by kind of the same people now who are pro MAHA. So it's an interesting history of DGAs. Mm-hmm. They're always controversial. The main processes that You have a Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee that gets together and they answer a bunch of questions and basically put together this scientific report. And then that is handed off to USDA and HHS to actually form the DGAs. And, you know, there'll be some changes or some things that aren't carried through from the scientific report to the actual guidelines that I think every year you get to see every 5 years you get like a headline about like what, you know, something controversial.
When did that first food pyramid come out? Because everybody focuses on that. Because you went in your Substack, you talk about right. that. There was like a list of those seven things that are very reasonable.
Yeah,
that was the 1980. But then when did the actual that food pyramid came out? I was in 1993. I was in third grade when I or second grade. Yes, it was 1992 or 93.
92 when it came out.
Yeah. Okay, so I remember I was in third grade. And I remember they first came out with it. And I was like, damn, look at it. I can eat all this bread. And that's kind of the thought. It's like where everybody's right. like, yeah, eat more grains. I ate right. more pasta and it doesn't, you know, whatever. But then that came out then. And then it went away in 2011.
Yeah, that's when, well, there was an updated one that came out.
Soon after the Daxu Lift made our own pyramid.
We
made a pyramid. In 2008,
it actually looked like the. It actually kind of looked like the current this pyramid,
just without the steak and the saturated fat at the top.
Well,
the pyramids are supposed to like be a pictographic accompaniment to show like relative proportions and amounts that you can catch like an easy visual to accompany and translate the text, which is relevant for this DGA because it really. Doesn't do that anymore. But so like, I think now the up until right now, the previous guidelines for the past 15, 20 years had evolved to being like, you've got this report for policymakers and healthcare professionals. And then you've got, that gets used in various federal programs and things, but then you have things like MyPlate and a whole, like, I think it was choosemyplate.gov was the site for a long time that had like tons of consumer facing materials. It was pretty clear like that wasn't getting as much funding necessarily as it maybe should have had. And there wasn't like a big cultural revolution around MyPlate so much, but there were efforts taken to translate that very long report. Often you'll hear the Dietary Guidelines get critiqued for being overly long and people don't quite get that they're like more healthcare professional and policy report. And then that there's these accompanying materials that are intended to be the sort of consumer facing thing. And we've now flipped all that on our heads with the new DGA.
I love the MyPlate. So everybody's basically saying this is revolutionary. The thing that's making me so annoyed is like this, like you say, the theatrics and the performative self-back padding that everybody's doing about these are so amazing. This is going to finally shift everything, and they're finally pushing towards real food. But the MyPlate was, you know, pretty similar as far as I. Can see just even well, just
and it's been similar forever. I mean, all dietary guidelines, not a lot has changed other than it seems like they're trying to promote more of a bias towards, say, the saturated fat and red meat. That's the one.
Well, let's hear what
unsound. Let's hear what Kevin. So what are they really saying?
Yeah, let's hear Kevin. I want to know exactly these discrepancies. I read your stuff, so I have a good idea, but I'd love to know, you know, someone who knows the previous guidelines pretty well and what these new ones say.
And the fake food that they said everyone's been eating and now we can finally eat real food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got a release on like eatrealfood.gov and so they released a 10-page dietary guideline and then they released a daily servings guide that tells you how much of each food group to eat. And then there's a scientific review document that accompanies it that kind of explains some of the deviations that they made from the Dietary Guideline Advisory Committee report that's 90 pages, and then a 418-page appendix. And then we also got a new food pyramid. And so it's a lot to digest. I was pretty critical of people who took like really quick reacts. I'm like, guys, you gotta dig into this a tiny bit. I think at a super high level, I've been calling it a nothing burger with an emphasis on the burger, where it's if you read the actual 10-page report, like a lot of it is the same as previous guidelines. If you look at the daily servings guide, a lot of that looks quite similar as well. It's the same protein foods, dairy, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and then oils. If you look at like what the text says, it's a lot of reasonable stuff. Eat fruits and vegetables, keep added sugars low. They actually have really aggressive, like no kids under 10 should be eating any added sugars. So you could argue that's aspirational. You could argue it is like completely unlikely to happen and not feasible, but they really put it out there. Like that was quite strong. Where, you know, then they say to eat like dairy and meats, of course. And they talk about the basic things you would expect around like tailoring for infancy. It's clear they had some pediatricians write it. That was one thing I point out in the Substack. It's quite obvious there's like many authors and many voices throughout all these different reports that they made, even within the dietary, the 10 pages themselves. It's clear some people wrote some section and then some others wrote another section. And so it's not
really cohesive.
No, and it's very clearly not written by like a dietitian or somebody who has training in food, because there's just, I have a little section of my Substack called Flubs, but just like blatantly wrong things about food composition or labels that they have that are incorrect. So it's, I don't want to get too much into that petty stuff, but at a high level, a lot of like what they said looks the same. But I think, yeah, where things start to change and get a bit contradictory is in like the healthy fats and dairy section. They emphasize, and more in the scientific review document, they explain that healthy fats are just natural, like foods found in, or fats found in natural food. So meat, dairy, eggs, salmon, nuts and seeds, olives, and avocado basically are their list. So those are all healthy fats. And so that is a pretty substantial deviation from the past, where it was, and they call out like including full fat dairy and recommend full fat dairy. Meats, I think it's assumed that they would be fattier cuts, but it's a little bit, it skirts that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But that's quite a deal. You know, some of the things in that list we would have called healthy fats in past guidelines. So salmon, nuts and seeds.
Nuts and seeds.
Seed oils.
Well, so seed oils don't make it in this, and that's
except that the seeds do, and those have the oils in them,
right? But any canola, soybean oil, that is safflower oils, those are all missing. They actually explicitly say to only cook in butter and olive oil and beef tallow. They have a whole thing in the scientific review about concerns from cooking foods within seed oils. I think we probably would need like a 2-hour long podcast to get into all that. But then they kind of confusingly keep the 10% of calories cap on saturated fat.
I was going to ask you to clarify that, because I saw that everyone says, oh, they're saying to eat more saturated fat. It's in the pyramid, but then in the actual text, it still says the same exact thing for saturated fat, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. And so basically, I don't think these things don't align on the surface, and it's very hard to. So the other major change that dovetails with this is they basically encourage increasing protein intake. So to between 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram body weight, which the current intakes are between 1 and 1.2 kilograms, with some variation across like life stages and things there. And weight, body weights. But in general, we eat more than what is the current RDA of 0.8 grams per kilo, but not quite 1.2 to 1.6 range. So that would be a bit of a boost from what we're currently eating. And for like an average adult, they kind of put forth a threshold of something more like 80 to 100 grams. I think 100 grams is the actual number in the review. So that would be, you know, quite a bit extra protein, you know, for you guys lifting audience and things like that probably sounds like nothing. But so it's really hard if you sit there and try and plan a diet that is less than 10% of calories from saturated fat, but emphasizes high protein foods like animal foods, and then is also including more fatty animal products. So it's,
we should, we should
just don't align.
We should get this podcast sponsored by Laura's Beef. It's the, you know, the one, the lean beef that you see that's always in the, you know, the 93% to 96% lean. There's a guy on Instagram, there are people going off about the guidelines, and he showed it what the diet looked like. It was 0% Greek yogurt. It was top sirloin. It was very lean cuts of meat.
Right. Dairy and meat.
Very similar to kind of how we eat, although I like some fattier meats now just because it just tastes so good. But
the past guideline never said like don't ever eat fatty meats and whole fat dairy. It's just it was emphasizing minimizing dairy and things, but it was more about like when you're communicating to the public, they're not going to calculate like their percentage of calories,
right,
saturated fat. So you emphasize the fat sources that are lower in them and de-emphasize or recommend restricting the fat sources that are higher in them. But it was never like never cook in butter. It was just like that should be sparing compared to the predominant, most of your cooking should be in a mix of these more unsaturated oils. So those are big deviations and kind of, this is where the guidelines don't really align with one another. Like it's quite clear the entire scientific review was, and the larger appendix was all gearing up for taking away the typical recommendation to replace saturated fats with PUFAs. But then they kind of like weirdly still retain the 10% cap on saturated fat, which was always, that 10% number always came from food pattern modeling that is done. So the foods and their nutrient composition of typical American foods are, they lay out the whole meal plan that is recommended with the different serving sizes of the different food groups and say, what's the likelihood that you meet the estimated nutrient requirements, fiber, protein, et cetera, that we're saying, that we say are the nutrient requirements, what's the likelihood you meet them with the food pattern that we're recommending? And so it's really hard to have a diet more than 10% of calories and hit fiber, hit folate, et cetera, et cetera. So now that you have to get way more protein, which this is another area in their daily servings guide, their protein equivalencies for different serving sizes of food don't really make any sense. You have like one egg is the same as 3 ounces of meat and so like a poultry. And so you've got like 20 something grams being equivocated to 6 grams. Same for like nuts and seeds. The actual like protein food serving sizes they give are all over the place from like 6 to 26 grams. And then they recommend 3 to 4 of those. Well, if you're including any protein foods that are like nuts and seeds, that's only 6 grams. So one of your servings without the window, you basically have to eat or Greek yogurt, a lot of Greek yogurt in this
it's
meal
plan. It's a bodybuilder, which is,
not even, because a bodybuilder diet would actually be probably higher in carb and low fat proteins, not high fat proteins.
Yeah, well, I'm saying like your Greek yogurt, if it has, it's going to have to be 0%. It's going to have to be
0%. They want full fat dairy in the picture, but not in the text.
They say include full fat dairy. And so then the people on Instagram are like, no, just use 0%. But it says, it doesn't say may include some of this. It says include it. And then examples they're all putting out are 0% Greek fat-free Greek yogurt.
Yeah. And it's not clear, like, are they saying have, like, when they say 3 servings of dairy and include full fat, do they mean all 3 servings? Not too much is clear, which you could argue they're allowing for like some level of flexibility, but it's still pretty hard to plan a diet that meets all the targets that they're saying. And then obviously you come to the issue that the pyramid then that they produce is like, it looks like a low carb diet pyramid. They've kind of inverted the pyramid and they've got, a pyramid is supposed to convey the, at the bottom, the things you should emphasize with amounts and proportions relative to what the text would have said. And then as you go up the pyramid is the things you should have smaller portion sizes of, and at the top, the things you should minimize. Well, they flipped the pyramid upside down and it is like massive cuts of steak, an entire turkey, big wedges of cheese, a whole thing of whole milk and like egg, salmon, yogurt. And then you get like one of each nut, so like a single almond. As you get closer to the point of the pyramid, you have some non-starchy vegetables at the other side of the base, and then some fruits. And then at the top, you have whole grains, which typically the top of the pyramid before was things you minimize, but the text doesn't recommend minimizing whole grains. They kind of emphasize it. The portions, the portion sizes and where they land on the pyramid don't actually convey any information about what the relative amounts the text recommends. So it's quite confusing. But most people, I think, we're not talking about the text of the 1990 dietary guidelines. We're talking about the 1992 pyramid because that's what people remember. Uh-huh. So I think people will remember this pyramid, which basically just kind of slaps you in the face and says, eat a ton of full fat animal products and some vegetables and fruits and then minimize grains. I think you can blink and miss lentil. Like there's no lentils or chickpeas or soybeans on this, really. It's just green beans and frozen peas. And so you can miss a lot of the kind of healthy plant food sources. This was an area that people, I think, were worried that they were going to go all out on animal protein And they do mention in the text like a mix of healthy plant animal proteins. But as we were talking about with the serving sizes that they give and the number of servings, you basically have to have 75% animal protein.
Which, so, you know, I'm super cynical and people don't follow the guidelines anyway. How do people are saying, but what if this gets school lunches changed? Is you mentioned before that they don't even really define the processing of the food, at least with the Nova and all these different ways of categorizing process. They don't even
the old guidelines. It's not like they were saying go eat processed food. That's what drives me insane. Everyone's like, oh my God, we're finally talking about eating real food. It's like it's the same thing. We're still eating more vegetables, fruits, beans.
Nobody's gonna do it anyway.
Well,
yeah, so that's the other big thing in this guideline is that they have a lot of language around processed foods. They've had a call out for defining ultra-processed foods, and a definition hasn't been finalized yet. Nobody can agree on these things. You know, everybody, when they think processed food, they're all like, you know, I always joke, it's like porn. You know it when you see it, but nobody can come up with a definition for it, and that's kind of how processed food is. People have been trying to make a scientific term for junk food for quite a long time and haven't really succeeded. And so they settle on not using ultra processed, even though they cite a lot of that literature. They just use the word highly processed and kind of throw some vague definitions out there, which people are cheering on. And it's like, it's I guess if you're kind of like in the foodie movement or kind of like, I don't know, I've done a lot of clinical dietetics all across the economic spectrum. And if I asked what a processed food was at every tier, you would get so many different answers. And the moment you tell people that their protein powder is processed and their oat milk latte is processed, they get really pissed off and don't regulate processed foods anymore. But people have been cheering it on, but not having a definition for it that's like regulatable. Like, I don't know from what they've written that it'll actually carry over into any meaningful federal regulation. Because that regulation, you need to be able to define something and you need to be able to enforce it. And so if you can't define or enforce something, it's really hard to regulate around it. So not clear whether that will make it into school lunch. I suspect school lunch will just have whole milk as an option now. There was already 2% as an option. So like, that's okay, I guess. One of the things the guidelines really miss out on is they're so meat and dairy, like pro meat and dairy. There's really not clear what's going to happen with alternatives. So they're against processed foods, which would be against, you know, meat alternatives. It would be against most soy milks on the market, which would be a solid dairy alternative. So people have expressed concern already that, like, you know, this, if you have lactose intolerance, or if you just don't eat dairy, you don't eat meat, this guideline barely considers you, even though they have a whole section on vegans and vegetarians. It doesn't make a ton of sense. And they I don't know if they misinterpreted or intentionally misutilized some analyses the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee did, but they basically make it sound like if you go vegan or vegetarian, you're going to be like deficient in all of these nutrients. That is not really the case, like including like vitamin A and things that you're not going to be likely deficient in. So what they did was they took the food pattern modeling from the typical USDA healthy style. So they estimate the nutrient or the nutrients you'd get if you ate that dietary pattern. And the DGAC just did an analysis where they removed the eggs and the dairy and then said like what nutrients you'd be a shortfall if you take those out. And then they didn't substitute it with anything. So no plant-based alternative. They just took all those calories out. And the new dietary guidelines use that analysis to say that there's this like huge long list of nutrients you'd be deficient in if you were vegan. But it was from like an extremely low calorie meal plan from some modeling exercises. It was never intended to be consumed by the DGAC. So it was quite a lot of like bizarre things. I detail even more in the Substack of just a lot of inconsistencies. Like, you know, if you're somebody who's like, yeah, people should eat fruits and vegetables and grains and dairy, and you look at that image and think it seems reasonable, it's fine. Like, I'm not here to tell you you're wrong, but it's pretty portion distortion on the imagery. The text has contradicting things within it. The text pretty clearly contradicts with what the pictograph in the pyramid like shows. And so, and then how all this is actually going to get translated in the policy, I think, you know, the USDA secretary has said that they're going to do that, but it's not really clear what will hold weight and what will, you know, right now in the Code of Federal Regulations, there's like school lunch standards that are there that very explicitly lay out like different serving amounts per week that need to be consumed from fruits and vegetables and whole grains and protein foods. And then, you know, caps on added sugar, saturated fat and sodium. It's not clear which of those are going to stay or go. You know, they have very strict added sugar guidelines here, but it's given as a per meal and per snack category rather than like an overall less than 10% of calories. So not sure if they're going to update CFR in that way. So we have a lot to wait on. What I always emphasize for people at the end of the day is that we've been saying eat low sugar, eat high fiber, eat fruits and vegetables for 40 years and it's done nothing. So that should tell you alone how much the power of the dietary guidelines is quite minimal. They themselves are a starting point that then policymakers would need to go and use them to justify policies. And really, there's so much focus on like what the guidelines say and not like, well, what are we doing with the guidelines to actually implement them? So,
well, if Laura's Beef is listening, well, we sponsor the podcast. Every time we get so, please sponsor our podcast. Somebody sponsor us that we actually like.
That we like. Can we? I mean, do I see on this? I see, is it the Jolly Green Giant with the peas on the pyramid?
Yeah, who's
I'll
that?
I'll take Jolly Green Giant.
We'll get the
vegetables.
Whatever.
Hey, and you know what? We're meatheads. We like eating some red meat, and we'll really even argue, we'll debate that having a little bit of quality red meat is healthy in a
we
bigger,
like it.
Or not healthy, but like fine in a
yeah,
bigger,
fine.
Healthy pattern sort of thing. That's not so discordant from this. What the things I don't like are, they go, all right, we're finally going to eat more butter and beef tallow. It's, and the things that are definitively like sort of discordant from the science. Yeah. That's what I don't like. Yeah. Eating more vegetables, eating fruit. They have at least they have the nuts and the seeds in there, and the olive and the avocado, and you know the dairy. We can even have some nuanced discussion because cheese is generally pretty good for people, and yogurt and all that stuff, and the salmon. That's all great, but if people start eating like I don't know, fast food burgers because they're made with tallow or something.
Nothing's going to happen.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right. I think that's a huge thing as people interpret this. Like if you're thinking of the American diet as like KFC and eating out fried foods all the time, like if you ate this food pyramid it'd be much better. I think this food pyramid doesn't really convey necessarily the up-to-date science. I think what they've released lends itself to many different interpretations. You can see whatever you want to see in this because there are so many inherent contradictions that some people are saying it's a nothing burger and it looks the same as before. Some people are calling it a radical change. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of propagandized stuff about like, we're ending the war on protein or we're ending the past guidelines that promoted ultra processed foods.
Yeah. So where were those, Kevin Klatt? Can you tell me where in those guidelines they said not to eat enough protein and eat more processed food? Because I couldn't find it. I looked. I couldn't find it. I don't know. Whatever. That's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't really exist. I mean, there were some, I think, there were some controversial things past dietary guidelines did with kind of how they set up their protein equivalencies and all that were like, just sort of like cringed a little bit. But it wasn't, I'm not like, it's not setting up the public for like some massive decline in their health status or anything. So, all these things are unfortunately, they've always been, food is always political to some degree, and this is weird. Just putting that on steroids. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're going to put your Substack in the show notes. Everybody go follow Kevin Klatt on Instagram and Twitter. I don't even know if you do Twitter much, but Instagram you do a lot. Substack, your Substack's great. You're a great writer and very smart guy. There's a lot more I could say, but I'm gonna keep it off air. But.
Oh, great. Now I have to hear it off air. All right.
Well, thanks for having me on. We don't
Let's cut Spencer off before this gets on. And we lose all of our sponsorship that are maybe.
We're going to lose those sponsorships and now get some nasty emails from. I actually, because of my last email, I got a couple. Everybody loved it except for two people were like, oh, and you're always making these innuendos on your podcast. I'm like, all right, well, don't follow me, please. Anyway, share this podcast with anybody interested in the guidelines and read his Substack. I think it's just the best breakdown of it all. And thanks for coming on. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.